And the New York Times helps me to take that as totally normal.
Well, on that note, we'll leave people to meditate upon that. Wally Shawn's first book of nonfiction essays called simply that, Essays. Wally Shawn, award-winning playwright and essayist. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Shrufa Bokadus. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you, Amy, for the surprise ending there. It's 6 o'clock, 6:01 actually, and you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Good evening. It's another edition, exciting edition, that is, of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. It's school time again here at Stony Brook, apparently. I had so much trouble finding a parking space, but yeah, all these people everywhere again. yeah, here we go again. Another semester, fall semester has begun as of yesterday, I believe. And boy, it's something. It's something to see all the bright new faces showing up. Totally unaware of what's in store for them. And then the old cynical faces of the people who have been through it already and are either coming back for more or have left and are simply coming back to watch. No, it's fun. It's college years are probably the best years of your life. Yeah, it just goes to show that life really isn't as great as it's cracked up to be, but, you know, you take what you get. And, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things that can happen to you in your college years, and hopefully, here at Stony Brook, that'll happen to many people here. It's certainly a great place to experience all sorts of different cultures and different aspects of philosophy, and also get lost on a huge campus and things like that. It's definitely shaped me into the messed up person I am. So there's your blame right there. I'm trying to remember, you know, the first days when I came here to Stony Brook, way back. Oh, yeah. It was kind of traumatic, actually, because, you know, whenever you show up in a new environment, you always feel out of place. You always feel like you're the person standing out, and you never think that, well, you know what, there's several thousand other people in the exact same predicament. Because all those people, yeah, they're well adjusted. They've got it all figured out. They know exactly what they're doing with the rest of their lives. And I'm the only person that doesn't. And, yeah, you know, it's incredible because you feel that way and you don't talk to other people and you just sort of think you're in it by yourself. And it takes time to actually figure out that it's a whole lot different. I remember, you know, I'm really trying to remember the first classes I went to. Some of them just seemed unintelligible to me. And you do this thing to your head where you say to yourself, oh my God, I'm in college now. You know, I'm in this place where people are so much smarter than I am, and I can't possibly survive here. And then that translates into just not being able to comprehend what you're hearing in classes or what you're reading in books, and just realizing that it's all a big mistake and a waste of time. But if you realize that everyone's going through this, or at least people who think are going through this, some people just act robotically and just make it through everything. But for those of us who overthink things and just kind of worry a bit too much, yeah, you know, you're going to go through that stage where you say to yourself, boy, I made a big mistake and I shouldn't be here. And it's too hard. And it's the payoff. What's the payoff going to be after 5 or 6 years of college? What am I going to be doing with my life? You know, what am I going to use this degree for? And, you know, if you think like that, you're doomed. Well, you're not doomed for thinking like that, but if you think like that and keep thinking like that and live your whole life like that, yeah, you're doomed. You're doomed to be just a robot. Somebody who can't find the joy in life and just works for the what they consider to be the greatest financial incentive and the least hassle. Not wanting to cause any waves or stand out at all. Well, it's all about standing out. It's all about being different. It's all about finding out more about yourself than you ever knew possible. And if you do it right, that's what college can be. Learning about the hidden depths inside you. And, you know, the one thing that bothers me, I don't want to say it bothers me about kids today because I can't stand people that say the thing that bothers me about kids today. This is the thing that bothers me about society today. How about that? People just think too much in a common sense mode, where everything has to have some kind of a payoff. It has to make sense. Has to be practical. And I'm not really about practicality, because practicality, in all honesty, is boring. And you don't really get anything different out of it than anybody else has gotten in the past. The only way you're going to actually excel and find out amazing things and go places that you never thought you'd ever go is to experiment, do different things. Take those courses that have absolutely no tie-in whatsoever to whatever you fancy you'll be majoring in. And that's another thing. You know, I didn't decide what I was going to major in until I was here for 2 years, and the only reason I majored in what I majored in was because I couldn't major in anything else. That's how bad I was. So, and I'll tell you something else. You know, that degree, it was nice. It was a nice little piece of paper, which I almost accidentally threw out once because I was sweeping the floor and I just saw a piece of cardboard and I thought it was a piece of cardboard. I didn't realize on the other side of it was a diploma. So yeah, I almost threw out my diploma while sweeping up dust. But regardless of that, it hasn't really done anything practically for me, but it was great. It was a great experience getting it in the first place and just sort of one step at a time figuring it all out and trying not to flunk out. But at the same time, finding this place, this radio station, finding all kinds of cool people to hang out with, finding all kinds of other extracurricular activities to be involved in, something that people are afraid of these days because, oh, it takes away from my GPA. It takes away from my career. Well, I'll tell you, your career is being a human, and anything that makes you a better human is a good thing. So, yeah, pass your courses, but don't go crazy. You know, people study all the time. They're not getting anything out of what college is really all about. There is so much you can get, no matter where you're going, no matter what kind of school you're going to, there is something you can get out of it. So, yeah, you know, it's funny, because I wasn't even thinking of the whole college issue before I almost ran some people down on the way over here. I realized, hey, school's in session again, and boy, I remember those days. I remember those early days. And, you know, the best courses I took were the ones that really had nothing to do with anything I was studying. I took Chinese. I took Chinese 101. Yes, there's such a course here at Stony Brook. There really is. In fact, you can take a course in almost any language here, I think. No, not Klingon. Don't even start. But there are all kinds of interesting side notes you could go off on. Side tangents, whatever the phrase is. All kinds of art courses and theater courses and science courses and foreign language and foreign culture. Yeah, it was a Chinese philosophy class, actually, that really changed my life in ways I hadn't expected, because I was doing so badly in this class, and I realized there's no possible way I can pass. Yeah, it was horrible. And I think I was in my third year at that point, and basically, I decided, well, okay, I can do one of two things. I can really apply myself and go nuts and not do anything but schoolwork and take 18 or 20 credits. I can drop out. Or, number three, I could just mellow out a little bit and actually reduce my course load, do better in my courses, have more time for other things where I can relax, and simply stay for another year. And that last year was the best year ever. It was incredible. That's pretty much, I think, what changed everything was just coming to that realization and the relief of knowing that, you know what, it doesn't have to be stressful. It doesn't have to be all bad and crazy. What's the worst that can happen? And yeah, of course, you know, you'll get all kinds of advice and opinions from other people who want to pressure you into doing things their way. Don't listen to them. Do it my way. Yes. But seriously, it's a fun experience. It's a fun time of life, and if you're part of it, enjoy it. All right, but today is crisis mode because Gmail's down. Oh my God, the whole world is falling apart because Gmail is down. Can you believe this? Yeah, everyone is talking about this. It's, oh my God, how many people are dependent on some distant website for all of your email? It's the dumbest thing ever. And the thing is, intelligent people do this. People that know about privacy, that know about technical things, they store all their mail on Gmail. Why? Well, because Gmail's cool. You know, it's better than Yahoo, isn't it? It's better than Microsoft. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe at the moment it is. But when you put all your eggs in one basket, well, something's bound to happen to the basket at some point. I'm not quite sure how the analogy goes, but it's never a good idea. Yeah, use it as a backup. I use it as a backup for some things, not for everything, because you know what? I have some sensitive private things that I'd rather not be stored on somebody else's computer. And like it or not, it is somebody else's computer. And not only that, they even read your mail and they admit it. They admit it. Yet they have their bots or their computers or whatever going through and finding keywords so that they can give you ads on the side. But does it really make a difference if a robot is reading your mail or a human is reading your mail? Does it really make that much of a difference? Yes, all email going through the net, unless it's encrypted, can be read as it passes through other machines. Or it can even be stored, but that's kind of a violation of law if it's not the final destination. It's very different to read mail as it's going by than to have it stored on your machines for all time, as is the case with Gmail. So many people do this. So many people keep everything they own on one company's site. And that's why when a day like this comes where it all falls apart, you have to laugh a little bit. You have to say, wow, is this ever a wake-up call for you? Let's see. I'm trying to access some stories. I went to Google, got a nice printout here of a Google error. Google error, server error. The server encountered a temporary error and could not complete your request. Please try again in 30 seconds. They're so confident that they'll have it fixed in 30 seconds that they tell you to do that. 30 seconds. That's a 502 server error, in case anybody's keeping track. Then I looked at PC Magazine's website, Gmail experiencing outage. And this is a major story all around the world. It's a website going down is a major story all around the world. You know, it's the 70th anniversary of World War II, but this is a bigger story. Yeah, Gmail is currently experiencing an outage, according to the company's status page. We're aware of a problem with Google Mail affecting a majority of users, the company said. The affected users are unable to access Google Mail. At 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Google said that service had been restored for some users, and they expected a full resolution within 1.2 hours. They really are exact with their timing, aren't they? 30 seconds, 1.2 hours. Because this is impacting so many of you, we wanted to let you know we're currently looking into the issue, because we wouldn't be looking into it if it didn't affect so many of you. Yes, and we hope to have more info to share here shortly, the company wrote on its Gmail blog. If you have IMAP or POP set up already, you should be able to access your mail that way in the meantime, meaning if you don't rely on our servers to store the email, if you have it actually sent someplace locally, which makes all the sense in the world, that way you have control over it. Anyway, we're terribly sorry for the inconvenience, and we'll get Gmail back up and running as soon as we install the spyware. As soon as possible. I'm sorry. Read the wrong line there. The problems come a day after the Google email service experienced several service disruptions around 2 p.m. Monday. Google said a small subset of Gmail users were not able to connect to Google Mail. If you're one of those people, by the way, you're also on the no-fly list. Interesting fact. Yeah. The issue was fixed for most users about a half hour later. And this is not the first time. Google's had several Gmail outages this year, including one in February, another in March, a larger outage in May, and now this. Oh, it's so much fun. I tried to read the the Computer World article, but their site's down, too. And I just got a big error when I tried to reach that. This from TechCrunch. We wrote this morning about Gmail suffering some turbulence, but it appears now that it has completely crashed and disappeared. Both apps for a domain and the usual consumer Gmail service are down completely. Google seems to be going backwards in fixing the problem. This morning they sent out an alert saying Google Mail service has already been restored for some users, and we expect a resolution for all users in the near future. Please note this time frame is an estimate and may change. I use apps for domain for everything. My contacts, my email, my to-do list, my chat, my documents, and more recently, my phone. Oh, my God. As soon as it went down, I noticed in less than a second. Oh, come on. You couldn't notice in less than a second if your heart stopped beating. It's not possible. I am now completely stuck. After a few months of being impressed by how I was able to run my entire life on Google. Well, you're easily impressed. It is not just the front end that is down, but also the back end IMAP and POP servers. This is a huge fail for Google, considering how admired they are for all the technology they have built internally to scale out their applications. An update, the Google App Status dashboard says there is currently a service disruption with email. Another update, the outage immediately became a trending topic on Twitter, which somehow remained up. With thousands of tweets from users noticing and complaining about the outage. What a time we live in, huh? People tweeting about Gmail outages. The outage that we reported this morning was not as widespread, but could point to a potential originating cause. Another update, still down. I wonder if the paid apps for domain users who have an SLA are also down. It's basically an agreement that if things go down for a long period of time, somebody's going to pay. And then another update at 3:53 p.m. Eastern Time. We're aware of a problem with Google Mail affecting a majority of users. I think we read this one already. They say they'll be back in an hour. Engineers must have been out at lunch. And, yeah, let's look at some of these tweets, because they're priceless. They really are. These are all in Spanish. Why is that? Okay. Well, because it's affecting everybody all throughout the world. You're getting all kinds of languages here. Yeah. Gmail is down. Okay, this is, I can't read that. That's obscene. It should be back to working very soon. Yeah. Okay, most of these are really kind of nasty. But yeah, it's incredible how people are so dependent on one machine, or one server rather, one system. Okay, some people are saying it's back. Is it back? Is Gmail back? I just see, oh wow, look at that. It's in German, but they're cursing in English. Huh. The fact that Gmail went down today and I didn't notice is just further proof that my life is well balanced. Yeah. Oh, yes. Gmail rejects Chuck Norris's password once, and now we all suffer the consequences. Another person asked, do you think there'll be a mini baby boom next June? Okay, I am told, actually, that Gmail is back. So, okay, this is an update as of, this is wrong. Oh, wait, it's 2:37 p.m. Western time, Pacific time. Okay, then. That would make sense, because it was not up when I started over here. We fixed the issue, and Gmail should be back up and running as usual. We're still investigating the root cause of this outage, and we'll share more information soon. Thanks for bearing with us. We know many of you are having trouble accessing Gmail right now. We are too. It's worrisome when the Gmail people can't access Gmail. And we definitely feel your pain. We don't usually post about minor issues here. The App Status Dashboard and the Gmail Help Center are usually where this kind of information goes. Because this is impacting so many of you, we wanted to let you know we're currently looking into the issue and hope to have more info to share here shortly. If you have IMAP or POP set up already, you should be able to access blah, blah, blah. Okay, we said all that already. Yeah, so crisis averted? Well, I'm going to actually try to go there myself and see if it works. Of course, I have to use the Mac in the master control room here, and that doesn't always work, but we'll see. Oh, yeah, it came right up. Look at that. There it is. Very nice. Gmail's back. Okay, so now for the less important story, World War II. Yeah, World War II started 70 years ago today. You remember those days? That was when Germany invaded Poland. And I don't know if it was an official, actual beginning of World War II, but other countries got involved a couple of days later, and this has pretty much been traced as when it all started. When certain things were thrown at certain fans. And, wow, you know, but 70 years, it's quite a long time. I'm beginning to wonder, maybe, hate to say it, don't want to jinx it, but maybe we're doing okay if we can go 70 years without starting another world war. Yeah, we've had lots of wars and holocausts since then, but the global kind, yeah, that's a little different. Had two of them in pretty quick succession, which actually I think was really just one, which kind of extended. But we seem to have learned something. I don't want to sound too blindly optimistic here, but I think by remembering things like this, by remembering the Gmail outage and the beginning of World War II, we'll be able to keep such horrors from ever happening again. That's important. You got to remember these things. Okay. If anyone wants to talk more about the beginning of World War II, feel free to call in. Or I imagine most people want to talk about Gmail, but our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. You know, we, as usual, get calls after the show, last week, but during the show, I think we had one come in. And I know we were not here for a few weeks, so that might have driven people away from listening live. But tonight, I would like to take some phone calls. So I'll tell you what, if we see a bunch, let's do a test run now. If a bunch of people can call that line and show me that you're out there, then in a few minutes, maybe about 10 minutes or so, I'll actually go into delay and make the effort to get more people to call in, hopefully you, and we'll take phone calls, knowing that there are people out there listening. Because right now there's no phone calls. It tells me nobody's listening. Yeah, nobody's listening. And what's the point? No point going into delay. It's hard work going into delay. 631-632-9872. 631-632-WUSB, country code 1. Those of you overseas already know this. And tell you what, if we see three lines, it only takes three people, three lines ringing. All you have to do is dial the phone, okay, and keep ringing for a while. And if I see three people calling at the same time, that tells me that they're either one person has a three-line phone or three people are out there, and we might actually have something to talk about. If not, you know, it's fine with me. I can keep rambling. You know, I only have a half hour left, but I can keep rambling for many hours. Yeah, you know that. All right, 631-632-9872. Let's see those phones light up. I see one coming in. That's good. There's one person out. Hi, how you doing? Stay there, though. Don't hang up, because if you hang up, then, you know, it doesn't count. The next person calls in, and I think it's still you. All right, there's two on the line now. Only one one hung up. Okay, now there's three. Very good. This is fun. This is fun. I'm making little red lights blink. And making people that I don't even know far away push buttons on a phone. Don't we live in a weird world? Okay, you can all hang up now. Everyone please hang up right now. Look at that, four calls. And we only have one for a bingo. One person hung up. Everyone else, I want you all to hang up. They're not listening to me. Someone else even called in. All right, we're going to take phone calls in about, I'd say, 10 minutes or so, as per my promise. But thank you. Thank you, people out there, for calling in. Making this this show the fun that it always is. Now, okay, you hear about this story. This this has been going on all week, actually. This guy who had held somebody captive for 18 years. Yeah, and fathered two children with this poor girl that was kidnapped. Philip Garrido's unspeakable private life began unraveling in a very public place, a college campus. See, there's no limit to what you can learn on a college campus. He arrived at the police office at the University of California at Berkeley. And by the way, this is a side note, Stony Brook has often been referred to as the Berkeley of the East. Initially, that was something that the administration tried to coin back in the 60s because they wanted it to have the same academic excellence as University of California at Berkeley. But turns out that the anti-war sentiment was so rampant here at Stony Brook that it literally turned into the Berkeley of the East insofar as demonstrations and activism. So it was it was a moniker that they wanted to distance themselves from almost as soon as it began. Okay, but getting back to this. Yes, he arrived at the police office with two girls aged 11 and 15, two very alert women, one the manager of special events, the other an officer, immediately sensed something was wrong. Listen carefully. Garrido announced he wanted to hold a religious event on campus related to a group called God's Desire. He seemed weird and unstable, but it was the pale, blonde, blue-eyed girls who really set off alarm bells. They wore drab, monotone clothes and seemed programmed, almost like Little House in the Prairie meets robots, says Allie Jacobs, a campus police officer. The younger girl was staring directly at me, says Jacobs, the mother of two small boys. It was almost like she was looking into my soul. Her eyes were so penetrating. When Jacobs asked her about a bump near her eye, she immediately replied with his very rehearsed response. It's a birth defect. I'll have it for the rest of my life. I was a little taken aback. She just wouldn't stop smiling. The older daughter, meanwhile, stared at the ceiling and looked at her father in awe, as if she were in worship of him. I kind of got the feeling that these kids were like robots. Yeah, you kind of said that already, too. Garrido gave them copies of his book he had written called Origin of Schizophrenia Revealed. They had a hard time following his conversation. But he revealed the girls were homeschooled by his wife with an assist from him. The girls said they had an older sister at home, 28 or 29, and that seemed strange, too, that she was even mentioned. And of course, that older sister actually was their mother, and that was the girl who was kidnapped 18 years ago. Yeah. Now, finally, Jacob says, Garrido grabbed his oldest daughter and said, I'm so proud of my girls, they don't know any curse words. We raised them right. They don't know anything bad about the world. By then, she says, my police mode turned into my mother mode, and her suspicions were more than confirmed when a records check found that Garrido was a registered sex offender who had been convicted of rape and kidnapping more than 30 years ago. A call was made to Garrido's parole officer, and a terrible secret was about to be revealed. Mascarita, known to kids as Creepy Phil in his neighborhood, had a reputation for peculiarity. He rambled nonsensically. He was dismissed as kind of nutty. He said God spoke to him through a box. Neighbors were worried enough about him to call police, but no one knew how bizarre his world truly was until last week when authorities revealed the stunning news hidden in the backyard of his cinderblock house on Walnut Avenue. Behind a 6-foot fence, leafy trees, and a tarp, was a compound of weathered tents, woodsheds, and buildings. What looked like a messy campground with mattresses, small chairs, bikes, books, piles of toys, a trampoline, showers, an outhouse, a swing set, even a carved pumpkin, was really a prison of sorts. Its inmate, J.C. Lee Dugard, the carefree little girl abducted in 1991, who authorities say had been raped, held captive, and shut off from society for nearly 20 years. As shocking as that was, there was one more stunning revelation. J.C. was now a 29-year-old mother. She had given birth to two of her suspected abductor's children, two girls raised in isolation. They had, according to authorities, never attended school, never visited a doctor, and J.C., it seems, had never reached out to anybody. So what's interesting about this whole story is the fact that the only reason we're talking about this right now is because of the abduction 18 years ago. All the weirdness that was described just now, all of that weirdness, the kids acting robotically, the crazy compound, the guy speaking all kinds of nonsense from his book and all these religious things, all of that is very, very common. The only reason this is a story is because of this crazy abduction that took place and the fact that he fathered two children with this poor girl that was abducted. But imagine all the families out there where kids are brainwashed into worshiping some crazy religious nut or crazy non-religious nut, where people live in terror, live behind a fence, where people never see a doctor, where people are homeschooled and don't have any real sense of what's going on outside their house. And yeah, you know, there's homeschooling that does work, but, you know, I think it's a mistake, to be honest, because of the social aspects. Believe me, I hated school with a passion that I could not even express, but getting out is an important thing. Meeting other people is an important thing. Realizing that your parents are not gods is a very important thing. And it just makes me wonder, you know, how many of the cases are out there where no laws have been broken, but people abuse their kids in all sorts of terrible ways that fall beneath the radar, all kinds of mind games and torture of various sorts. That's not physical torture, but makes you feel guilty about all kinds of things, makes you basically not develop into a real human being, just a clone, or somebody living out vicariously the life that a parent wants you to live. So yeah, horrible story. But most of what was described, you can probably find that in your own neighborhood pretty quickly. Okay, speaking of neighborhoods, we talked about Patchogue months ago. Remember Patchogue, where that Ecuadorian guy was killed by a bunch of rampaging thugs, racist thugs who don't like all the Hispanics in the neighborhood. Well, it hasn't ended. It's continuing. Two Suffolk County teenagers accused of beating an Ecuadorian man. It's always Ecuador. It's incredible. Accused of beating him in Patchogue, just steps away from where Marcelo Lucero was stabbed to death late last year, pleaded not guilty on Wednesday to a felony hate crime. Kurt Hatton, 19 years old, of Islip, and Matthew Mont, 16 years old, of Patchogue, were arrested, I guess, a week ago, and appeared at separate arraignments in First District Court in Central Islip, where they were charged with assault as a bias crime. Each was held on $50,000 cash bail, a $100,000 bond. Another man accused of participating in the August 15th attack, Ramon Rodriguez, 20 years old, of Patchogue, was arrested a week earlier, and held on the same bail. It's incredible how many people, when you read this story to them, they say, aha, look at that, another Hispanic. Ramon Rodriguez participated in this bias crime, as if somehow that changes things. That makes it not what it is. You know? And some newspapers are describing him as a white Hispanic, whatever that is. Somebody with Hispanic roots, I guess, who's maybe ashamed of him or something like that. The point is, when you attack somebody based on their race, their religion, their sexuality, or any number of other things, there's something really scary about that, because so many people are potential victims, not because they know the wrong person, not because they make an errant remark to somebody and cause a misunderstanding. No, just because of who they are. Just because of where they were born or what they look like. You know, and that to me is just like, it's a crazy kind of a crime to attack somebody for no other reason. I know a lot of people don't understand the whole reasoning behind bias crimes, hate crimes. But there has to be a difference between the kind of attack that takes place where people know each other, where people just get into some kind of disagreement over some stupid thing, and the kinds of attacks where somebody's doing absolutely nothing. And it's just attacked because somebody else has a screwed up sensation of what a particular race means or what a particular skin color is all about. Anyway, continuing here. But yeah, it makes no difference at all. Black, white, Hispanic, whoever does this kind of stuff. And yeah, it should be prosecuted across the board. If white people are attacked by a group of, Indonesians or something, yeah, it should definitely be prosecuted in the same way. I just don't see that happening very often. And don't tell me it's because the media, the liberal media, is not reporting it. That's not the reason. The alleged beating comes 9 months after and around the corner from where Ecuadorian immigrant Marcelo Lucero was beaten and fatally stabbed in November near Patchogue's Long Island Railroad train station. That case drew national attention to ethnic bias against Suffolk's growing Latino immigrant community and sparked an ongoing federal investigation into local hate crimes. Now, in this most recent incident, a 22-year-old Ecuadorian man told detectives he was walking on Division Street just south of the Long Island Railroad Station shortly before midnight when three men in the parking lot of Kapler's Bar called out to him. After one of the three beckoned the victim over, they had a brief friendly talk before someone suddenly punched him in the face. The other men jump in, they strike him, they kick him, they punch him, the police official said. Criminal complaints against the three say they called him a blankety-blank Mexican during the attack. The man walked, bleeding and sobbing, to the train station without shirt and shoes. They took those from him. A person waiting there for a train called police. The man who works as a day laborer, that might have been what set them off, was treated for cuts and bruises at Brookhaven Memorial Hospital and released. Yeah, pretty crazy, but not at all atypical. And interesting thing too about this whole case, what the police spokesperson says. One good thing we have going for us in this case is that the victim appears to be cooperative and trusting of police. Well, yeah, also the victim happens to be alive, which I guess is a plus. But the reason people don't trust the police is because lots of times the police don't do enough. And lots of times police look at other things. Yes, there are people who are in this country and they don't have the proper documentation. That's another issue. It's got nothing to do with this. It's got nothing to do with beating somebody senseless based on their skin color or their race. Does not matter what their status is. Does not matter what kind of person they are. The only thing that matters is that they're being attacked relentlessly by a mob of idiots. Unfortunately, if somebody were to report that and they didn't have the documentation that they needed to be in this country, then they are in trouble. That's why they don't go to the police. So, you know, it's not a justification in any way for those actions. To say, well, this person was here illegally, so therefore it doesn't matter as much. It matters every bit. A task force assembled by Governor Patterson says schools should educate students and teachers about bias crimes and that law enforcement needs protocols for responding to such crimes. The group established in the wake of crimes like the November killing of the Ecuadorian immigrant, Marcelo Lucero, in Patchogue, made its recommendations on the middle of the month, middle of August. The recommendations include training for teachers and administrators on how to prevent, recognize, and respond to hate crimes and literature and posters to educate students. Cesar Perales, president and general counsel of the New York City-based rights group Latino Justice, PRLDF, said such programs are important. I know the experience on Long Island indicates that young people are being caught up in the anti-immigrant sentiment. The group also recommends protocols for police, state, and community-based organizations for responding to hate crimes. The task force is developing a model policy for police statewide and will present a final version next month to the Municipal Police Training Council, which makes recommendations on police training. This is an important step in the right direction, particularly with the issue of having, training local police. I think that makes a tremendous difference, Perales said. The group also said prosecutors should be trained on how to best address hate crimes and penal law should be amended. Given the number of hate crimes that we have had in the last year, it indicates that there is a grave problem and still continues to be a problem, said New York Secretary of State Lorraine Cortez Vasquez, who sat on a task force. She called the recommendations a preventative measure. All right. And one more interesting thing about all this. A filmmaker is tackling a timely subject here on Long Island, which, of course, is bias crimes. James Garcia, an Ecuadorian immigrant, is filming Taught to Hate on Thursday. Actually, this already passed last Thursday in Farmingdale. Well, the important thing is not when he's filming, it's the fact that he is filming. Garcia says he hopes the movie will teach children tolerance. No release date for Taught to Hate has been announced, but that's what you need to do when things like this happen. Not shy away, not just walk away shaking your head, but do something about it in whatever way you can. If it's making a film, if it's marching in a demonstration, if it's starting a petition, whatever you can do. All right. All right, as promised, we're going to launch into delay and take some phone calls. Our number, once again, is 631-632-9872.
Hyvää iltaa.
Tässä laikainen kosmonaut Helsingistä Suomesta. And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And here we are, in delay. That was the smoothest one yet, wasn't it? Yeah, we had no problems whatsoever. And, you know, except for me speaking over the people. I'm sorry about that, but that's because, that's because I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, our phone number once again is 631-632-9872. And let's hope the phones ring, and we can talk to some people about various things. But let me just pass along some sad news first, while we're waiting for those phone calls to come in. And that comes out of Port Jefferson Station, which is fairly close to us. A 21-year-old dachshund, owned by a Port Jefferson Station family, who is believed to be the world's oldest dog, has died. Yeah, the small pooch who wore sunglasses for her cataracts and rode in a stroller when she could no longer walk died on Friday at home, said her owner, Denise Shagnessy. She just inhaled and took her last breath. Chanel had been telling me it's time. The Guinness Book of World Records said earlier this year that Chanel was the oldest dog in the world. 21 years old, Port Jefferson Station. Wow, incredible. 1988. Shagnessy, who was then a single mother in the Army, adopted the six-week-old puppy in Newport News, Virginia. She showed Guinness officials records proving the dog's age. We're military. You keep records, she said, adding that families living on Army bases must have documentation for their pets. But one thing, though, you know, you might want to look this up. Chanel, spelled C-H-A-N-E-L, world's oldest dog, doesn't look like a dachshund to me. Dog's white, and it looks like something else, so I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there. Maybe there was a dachshund back in 1988, but is it this dog? How do you prove it's the same dog? That's what I'd like to know. Not casting aspersions here, just raising suspicions. Huh? How about that? Okay, you know, we had phone calls and they all disappeared. What's up? What's up with that? 631-632-9872. Okay, well, you know, we have plenty of material here. We have letters. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. Here is a letter from Mutant Rob, who I saw over in Scotland, in Edinburgh, where he lives now. He used to be on this radio station. What I do with people who blast music from their phones or talk loudly is change my Bluetooth ID to something like shut the word up and make an educated guess whose phone it is and then try to connect. Oh, that's brilliant. I like that. They get the message, but so far can't ever figure out who it is. Sometimes, though, they have funny tantrums over it. Thanks, Rob, for that thought. All right, we have some phone calls.
It is.
Good evening. You're on off the wall here.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Port Chef right now.
Port Chef, close to where the world's oldest dog used to live.
Yeah, just about. Yeah, I actually, I think I might know the family.
Really?
It's Shaughnessy, by the way.
Yes. Oh, Shaughnessy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've actually met that dog, and that's just like an old dog. I'm sorry to hear about that.
Did that dog strike you as a dachshund, though?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's what's kind of odd.
I don't know much about dogs. I know what a normal dachshund looks like, but that could be a dachshund mix, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. It was white, right?
Yeah, it was white, exactly.
Never seen a white dachshund.
It was actually pretty funny.
Well, maybe that's what happens when a dachshund turns 21 and they turn white. I don't know, but it's worth investigating.
That's possibly it, too. By the way, do you guys know, I know the 6901 number still works.
It does, yeah. You can call it number two if you prefer. It goes to the same place.
Yeah, that's what I did, actually.
632-6901.
What I wanted to ask you is, I believe it was your first night in, oh boy, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
You played at the end of the closing of the show, it was a tune by the Pogues. It was either the Pogues or Shane McGowan by himself. Would you happen to remember what the name of that song was? I believe it was when you guys were in the tunnel.
Yeah, it was the Pogues for sure. And I forget the name of the actual song. But I could tell you, if I heard the album name, I'd know for sure that it was on that album.
I only had one CD, and I don't think that's it.
What's the album called?
God, or something like that.
It has lots of words in it. I know that much.
Yeah, it was actually a really, really very fitting for the show. Actually, very fitting.
Yeah, if I remember next week, I'll read the title when I come in. I'll look it up. But yeah, definitely it was the Pogues, and I think that fit pretty well with our trespassing on train tracks somewhere in Ireland.
It's all good, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, good. See, I didn't know that. I've been to Ireland and Scotland, and I didn't have as much fun as you did, apparently.
Well, it just depends on what you do. You know, if you just wander around and try to have adventures, then, you know, you meet people, you will have fun.
Yeah, that's true, too. I actually went to the loch and looked for that big lizard, but that didn't want to see me, so I guess that was it.
The Loch Ness Monster. Yeah, that's... try to stay away from things like that.
Yeah, I know. I should have known better, but you know, it was nice to say, "Yeah, I've been there," type of a thing. Did you try haggis?
Yes, I did actually in Scotland. In fact, I even have a recording of me trying it for the first time, which will air on our special Scotland show when that comes up in a few weeks. So you'll hear exactly what happened when I tried it. I'm not going to go into detail, but
I'm hip. I'll assume the same thing. Pretty much, I'll assume the same thing happened to me. I was able to keep it down, but you know what? I did it for the main reason, just to say. Yes, I tried it.
I think maybe you overthought it when you were having it.
It's probably what it was, but you know what? None of my friends had ever tried it.
Yeah, it's important to do that, you know, to actually try something and say, hey, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I feel I'm a better person for it, though.
All right. Anything else on your mind?
No, other than that, it's pretty much it. Hope all is well, and let the next person get on.
Okay, well, the next person is already disconnected, so hopefully we'll get them to call back again. But thanks for your call.
All righty then.
All right, take care. 631-632-9872 or 631-632-6901. That's our phone number. You only have a few minutes left, so let's not have what happened last week happen this week, where everyone calls after the show and misses out. I'll read another letter. We do get we got a lot of mail last week, so I'm happy about that. Please continue sending your mail, because we like to hear from our listeners. We like to know there are listeners. It's very reassuring when you're doing a radio program. Dear Emmanuel, I was listening to your August 25th show. when you were playing the tape of the guy on the train that went on and on. Yeah, for those who didn't hear, I recorded the guy in front of me on the train who was talking nonstop on his cell phone. And I figure it's a good way to get back at somebody if they're really annoying you, is to simply play their quote-unquote private conversation over a radio station, and maybe they'll shut up next time. Or maybe you'll think it'll happen to you next time and you won't do this. Anyway, this reminds me of a time where I was riding the commuter train up to Boston, and the person in the seat next to me was on the phone with his credit card company. Apparently he had a problem with a bogus charge. The thing is, he was talking loud enough that based on just hearing his conversation, I could tell what card it was, his name, his credit card number, expiration date, and even the three-digit security code on the back of the card. Yeah, and I wonder if he had bogus charges. He might as well give his credit card number over a loudspeaker. Good show. I'm looking forward to the next Hope in July. Signed, Dino. Dino, we all are. And we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hello. Are we in delay?
We're in delay, yes. It feels a little dizzy at first, but you'll get used to it.
No problem.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from North Carolina.
Oh, well, North Carolina. 919 and 910.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Oh, you have caller ID.
No, we don't have caller ID. I have that in my head.
Oh, in your head. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, 910. Anyway, calling on a few things.
Oh, you're on a cell phone, too. I can tell that, and it's a lousy one.
It sucks. It's a GMS stuff.
I think you mean GSM,
email,
but yeah.
And the whole drama about that, I'm kind of disgusted that you spend so much time talking about it, because, you know, but then you also, like, saying how disgusting it was that everyone got so upset about it.
70 years from now, people will say this is the anniversary of the great Gmail outage.
Yeah, it's also, I think, the 40th anniversary of the Internet, because I read that in the paper somewhere.
Is it really?
Yeah. But the people really need to learn that you can, with Gmail, download all your mail to a private machine through, you know, POP3 and an IMAP and stuff like that. So then they can have all their messages and contacts. And you can also export your contacts, like, you know, to different formats. And so if people were prepared, they wouldn't have this issue.
No, that is true. It's a good service. It's a great interface. I would, I'd run it all the time if I could run it locally on my own machine. But obviously, Gmail wouldn't be able to send ads if they did that.
I also don't trust, like, how they the mail, and it's just, like, kind of strange. Like, there's all so much tracking going on with the Google Latitude, which is a GPS tracking feature.
Right.
And it's also all this weird stuff. I'm kind of like, okay, I don't trust these guys anymore. I should move my data somewhere else.
Yeah, well, it's not so much the guys, it's the technology. The technology can be used in good and bad ways, but if you turn yourself over to it completely, it'll definitely be used in bad ways against you. And that goes for social networking and just having one company run everything for you. It's scary.
Exactly. Well, that's all I had to talk about, I know. So I'll let you have 1 minute for the show or whatever.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling, and good luck down there in North Carolina.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. And thank you, Finn, for running in here and telling me the song that I played a couple of weeks ago. You know my show better than I do. But, yes, it was Dirty Old Town by the Pogues. Thank you. And, you know, I should have remembered that. I should have remembered that. Dirty Old Town. And great song. It's also done by the Specials. Yeah, on, I think, the album More Specials. No, not More Specials. Today's Specials. That's it. Yeah, one of those. Okay, let's read another piece of email. We have time for another phone call if there are more people out there. 631-632-9872 or 631-632-6901, your choice. Country code 1, but again, only a couple minutes left. Then Finn takes over at 7. Dear Emmanuel, I just wanted to say I really enjoyed hearing all the Orwellian loudspeaker sounds from London on your last show. Yeah, last week we played some recordings from London that really are kind of spooky, I think. It makes you wonder when we'll have voices constantly reminding us about things we should or shouldn't do here in the U.S. I was incidentally watching Blade Runner the other night and noticed a very similar atmosphere with the constantly barking advertisements and the crosswalks that tell you, don't walk, don't walk, cross now, cross now. I love that about that movie, those little subtle things. And the fact that they had the fluorescent umbrellas. Remember those? Everyone's walking across the street. And not everyone had them. Maybe 2 out of 3 people had the fluorescent ones. It was obviously a fad of some sort in the future. And little things like that I thought were really cool. Anyway, have a good week. Keep up the good work. Signed, Refuge J, with a J there. And thanks very much for writing in. And, I don't think it's going to happen in the States quite the same way as it'll happen, as is already happening in the UK, because it's culturally different. It really is. Like I said last week, in England, they just love those recorded announcements. They love the cameras. They seem to have always had things like that. Just watch The Prisoner from 1968, and all of that existed then. And there are more films, too, even earlier than that. And I think I even mentioned the Teletubbies as an example of loudspeakers coming up out of the ground and speaking to you. And yes, that's a British show. It came from England. So, yeah, they're big into this. All right, you know what? We don't have any more time. Sorry. Not that there's anybody calling. Sad about that. But write to us, otw@2600.com. All right, I'm out of delay now. See, I'm back in the real world. And so are you. And you'll have to deal with the real world until next week when we do this again. I want to thank people for sending in email, for sending in news stories, for talking about all kinds of other things. Oh, yes, one more anniversary, which I did want to mention. So I'm talking about anniversaries today. Today is a very important anniversary. 70 years ago for the start of World War II. And, that's something. That's important. And what is it, 40 years ago, the Internet? Is that really true? Has that been verified? Or the precursor to the Internet? Yeah, something like that. It was 131 years ago today. Yeah, 131 years ago, back in 1878, that Emma M. Nutt, N-U-T-T, was hired by the phone company as the first female phone company operator. Yeah. Before that, before they had female operators, they hired kids. They hired teenage boys with disastrous results. They fought with each other, and they were unruly and rude to customers. Can you imagine what that must have been like? 1878. But Emma Nutt came in, saved the day. All right. Stay strong. Stay together. We'll see you next week. Good night.
The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. The people united. Would never be defeated. Okay. Gotta see the world as a whole. I'm not a fire without you.
In Stony Brook. Support me and the station and your country.